When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey Blenders, welcome to a bonus episode of Real Blend. I'm Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. You guys know, you've been listening to the show since the early days, and you know that this year, Dune Part 2 is one of our highest rated films that we've seen hit theaters this calendar year. We were lucky enough to have a wave of talent, of people who were associated with Dune Part 2 when the film came out in theaters. If you want to go back through our channel, you can find our interviews with Denis Villeneuve and Rebecca Ferguson, Hans Zimmer. And at the time, we had cinematographer Greg Fraser on the show, and he was great conversation. Greg talked about a lot of other directors that he worked with, doing some work on The Batman, obviously with Matt Reeves, and of course, all the stuff that he learned with Denis. And so we recently got the opportunity to revisit some of the people who had collaborated with Denis on Dune Part 2 on behalf of the film now coming out in a 4K and Blu-ray release. It's worth noting that that is something you are definitely going to want to pick up. You want Dune Part 2 in your collection. And so this week we have a very special bonus episode with not just Greg Fraser, the cinematographer for Dune and Dune Part 2, but he is joined by Joe Walker, who is the editor of Dune Part 2 and also the Oscar-winning editor of the first Dune, obviously collaborated with Denis, instrumental in bringing Denis' vision of Frank Herbert's world to the big screen. So we were thrilled to get these guys to sit down for a longer conversation about Dune and, of course, their work in the film industry. We knew that the Blenders would love it. Stay tuned at the end of the interview. We have a couple of teases about some of the more interesting If It Happens that did happen. If you're following social media, you guys might know already what it is. But for the rest of you, I'll explain to you what that is on the other side. But in the meantime, this is Joe Walker, editor of Dune Part 2, and Greg Fraser, cinematographer of Dune Part 2, joining us on the Real Blend podcast.
I've been following you guys. You're having way too much fun without me, so I'm glad I'm here at last.
Finally.
Joe, I have been thinking about you since Greg gave me this answer in our last interview, so I'm going to start with you. Well, first of all, to set this up for our audience, we were lucky enough to have Greg on early on for the release of the theatrical release of the film. And one of the questions I had asked Greg about was shooting in multiple formats, obviously, as you're presenting a movie in 1.43, 1.90, and obviously different formats as well. That becomes, I would imagine, a bit of an editing nightmare because you're dealing with all these different formats. And so I'm just curious from your perspective, because on set, Greg's having to frame to make sure that the image will be able to be projected on a 1.43 or a 1.90. And so for you as an editor, how does that work in terms of the way you're editing the film? Do you have multiple versions of it, knowing what images will hit different screens?
Well, you're always trying to find one edit that will fit all the aspect ratios, you know, and we do, you know, it is a frame by frame match, you know, the edit works in all those formats. But that's really, you know, a testament to Denny and Greg's ability to kind of get it right on set. I mean, I don't know, this film in particular, you know, the landscape is such a big part. It's a player in the story. And, you know, I was always given that material to be able to kind of balance, as in many cases in the film, the very intimate and the epic and the landscape itself. I mean, you know, Paul and Chani, when they get together on that top of a dune, on the ridge of a dune, it's, you know, I'm able to kind of cut wide and see the sea disappearing, you know, imaginatively far into the distance. And it was always trying to kind of get both, because we know how good that's going to look on a cinema screen in all the formats. The truth is, technically speaking, I actually cut poor Denny. He normally sits in the corner. There's a sofa down there, and he sits there. I've never actually seen the front or right-hand side of his face, not in all these films. But I actually work with a really small monitor. It's all about trying to kind of get the story to sing first and foremost here. And I've got a very good idea of how it's going to look on a big screen. But we then check every iteration of the cut in a big screen format, and especially towards the end, a very big screen format. And we're dubbing in a huge dubbing theater 9, I think it was, at Warner, which is huge, and with Atmos sound. So you're always very conscious. But technically speaking, I cut a 239 version of the film as the initial cut, day in, day out. And then all the time I would check, we'd have a parallel cut going on with the IMAX versions. And then there's a little bit of adjustment sometimes between the 239 and the IMAX versions, because, you know, you just can, there's a little latitude for me to move things. And Greg also had the wisdom to go to an A65 that gave us even more kind of range, you know. So Greg, you'd be able to attest to this better than I can, but it seems to be like a 6K image from which you can derive many different versions. So it's kind of, those are for special occasions, because I think it's a more expensive format to use, but it was like a very wise choice for those marginal choices where framing is going to be difficult to get in one.
Wow. That's insane. Go ahead, Sean.
Greg, I almost want you to sort of go from there, because when we had you on, we spoke at length about IMAX, planning your shots for IMAX. Now you're dealing with this, you know, you're dealing with it coming home. What kind of thought process goes into the 4K and what, how you can sort of preserve the work that you guys put into that theatrical vision?
I mean, you know, Joe, there's a bit of a backstory about the response that I gave when the guys asked me about that. And I said, effectively, that even the thought of that gives me shivers. Even today, the thought of having to frame for these multiple, and you holding up the DVD, Sean, thank you so much. I'm going to now go home, because that's added another anxiety pill to my kind of to my job. Because seriously, like when you're in the desert, the middle of the desert, and you're thinking about IMAX, then you're right, in the back of your mind you're going, the DVD, the day's going to come, because like, we're working on a 1:4:3 supreme ratio ideally, but then you're like, okay, well then there's also the 16:9, and like, you know, and so trying to get that right is a tricky one. And obviously, you know, it's an area beyond me as well about distribution and all those questions. So it's a really good question for our friends at Warner Brothers about their distribution plan for that ratio.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Greg and I do talk about that a bit sometimes. You know, Greg, the last time we had you on, I think you and I had DM'd a bit about this, and I couldn't believe I didn't bring this up in the interview, because I think our audience needs to know a lot more about the infrared aspect of how you shot Getty Prime and elements like that. And we were just talking with Jacqueline and Patrice about how even the costumes would switch in infrared, and like tattoos from extras on set would come through the infrared. Again, and forgive me, you know, obviously a zillion times more than I do about any of this stuff, but is it at all comparable to what Hoyta did with the infrared on Nope, with the Day for Night? Was that something that you were able to kind of look at? And can you just, at least, I don't know, just break down what that infrared aspect means, why it looks the way it looks? I mean, I know narratively how, why it does, but just technically how, why it looks the way it does.
Well, yeah, listen, Hoyta did shoot infrared on a stereo rig, from what I understand. I've never spoken to Hoyta, so this is not, yeah, I'm not giving you information that I know personally, but what I understand, but maybe the same way that you guys do, is that he shot on a stereo rig. One film camera that sees the real world, and another stereo camera which sees infrared. And when you're shooting into a blue sky with infrared, it goes dark or black, which is really interesting. And for him, I mean, it was a genius idea to be able to do that. I think that I think he did that on Ad Astra as well, and for some of the moon stuff, because that's always the tricky part. When you're shooting, say, on the moon, you've got sunlight but no ambience. You know, the white sky behind you, the blue sky behind you gives you ambience. And so the only way to get rid of that is to shoot at night with a big light. So again, not talking or commenting about what he did, but using the infrared like that was a very smart idea. The way we used it was a little bit different, because we weren't sort of making parts of the frame, say, dark, like the sky, like he was. We were sort of using it to have color inside and infrared outside. So our stereo rig was a little bit different in that sense. But using a stereo rig for the two cameras of the same lens is a, you know, was a great way to kind of combine those two things. So we used it a little bit more like I'd used it sort of in the past on Rogue One. Well, you know, Rogue One, we'd used it as a VFX camera because, you know, we were trying to shoot really dark lighting, but we needed to see full detail in face for face replacement and for VFX. And so being able to use infrared, because I could light them with infrared light, meant that the real camera, the normal camera, wouldn't see the light that the infrared camera sees. They see two different types of light. So it's actually a really cool, interesting thing. It's not the last you'll see of some derivative of infrared shooting, I think. Maybe not the same way as Getty Prime, because that was tailor-made, wasn't it, Joe? Like that was tailor-made for that effect. But I'm sure in the future you'll see some more semblance of, you know, versions of what we did on Getty Prime or what Hoyta did. Like infrared's a really interesting format that's only really come to the fore because of digital cameras. So that's why we probably haven't heard of it, you know, before 10 years ago.
Incredible.
I remember one of the things I was so impressed by was the fact that that was, apart from a tiny little pre-shoot in Italy, that was the first material you shot in main unit. It's a very kind of ballsy choice. It's like no going back. It's committed. And of course, as everybody joining a film, like, you know, we come very late. We start, you know, pretty much a week or two before they start filming. And that was the first material I was cutting. And and it's like that look on the skin and the eyes in particular is something that's unique, isn't it? I think to infrared, which is there's something waxy about Fade as an introduction to him. It's kind of deeply creepy, and there's a certain kind of distortion, you know, the eyes appear differently, so it's kind of very demonic and vampiric. That first couple of days shooting, I was like, I mean, I think also the situation you filmed it in looked like incredibly taxing, and when it was incredibly hot, I remember at the beginning of the schedule, and you're all basically in an oven.
Without any airflow. But you're right about the ballsy. I mean, when Denis described to me the scenes that he was writing, and, you know, because remember, I haven't still to this day read the books, you know, and I probably won't actually. I don't need to. I saw the films. So I hadn't read.
you shot the films.
Yeah. But I deliberately didn't read the book because I didn't want an image of anything in that. The 3 pages I read, I had these visceral images in my brain, and I went, I don't need that. That's not my job at this point. My job is to listen to what Denis' vision for this is. So I didn't read the book. So when he described to me what Getty Prime was and how it looked and felt, I said to him, like, dude, I've been playing with this kind of this thing for the last 7 or 8 years since Zero Dark 30. We shot the night vision goggles with infrared. Like I've been playing with a look that's using infrared light. It's really interesting. He didn't kind of quite understand, so I shot a test for him. And there was a couple of times, because remember, as Jackie made point, it influences everybody's job on set. It, you know, we had amazing costumes that we put that camera on, and suddenly Fade's wearing white like a Roman god. Like, it's like, well, that's not right. Doesn't really look appropriate. So I remember we Denis and I flip-flopped a few times. We kind of went, shouldn't we, like, and I remember we're gonna do it. We're like, yeah. And then I remember Denis went, no. And I went, okay, good. That decision's made. And so I think I'm walking out the door to tell somebody, he went, nope, we're doing it. And he, bang. So there's
no going back
for about 5 seconds. But I know his thought process, because you're right. It is absolutely, I mean, I had the GBs as well, even just presenting the idea that we shoot the first part of our movie, the first part that the studio will see, which, by the way, we love our studio. So, you know, we were all happy with that. But the first thing pretty much they'll see after this little Italian shoot that we did drinking red wine and eating pasta was that. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
And introducing a character that hasn't been seen before. First time we see Fade. I met him on coming out of set, and I sat in a Winnebago with him for about 10 minutes. And it's terrifying what they did to that handsome young man. It's terrifying. You know, there's a presence.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Joe, I wanted this. The 4K is out. People who are listening to this have seen the movie. We can talk in depth about the film. I want to hear the conversations that you and Denis both had about editing the final shots of Zendaya, knowing how much whatever you showed in that was not only going to bring closure to this film, but set up some major narrative threads for part three. I've heard multiple people talk, and rightfully so, about the amount of emotion that is conveyed in those shots. But I have to believe that your choices in editing in those final 2 minutes helped set up a lot of that. Can you just talk about your process with that?
I mean, actually, that whole last reel was, Denny pays me the most enormous compliment that an editor can receive, which is there are some scenes that when it works exactly the way that he wanted it and more, he doesn't change it. He just sticks with it. And the whole of Fade fight, the whole Fade and Paul fight, and that end scene were, with only minor adjustments, changed. That's not to say that there weren't parts of the film where we changed. There are hundreds of iterations of trying to kind of perfect something. But in that one, it just came fully formed. It was just exquisitely performed on set. It was extremely well planned. And like the fight, it just went together. It was some effort, but it was, you know, all the dynamism was there, all the little resonances, the reminders of the Gurney fight at the beginning of part one. Well, it's all baked in. It's extreme. I mean, like, Denny is, I think, an extraordinary planner. He's also capable of being incredibly spontaneous on set. I mean, I'm not there. I tried deliberately not, to go on set because, you know, to spare me the pain of seeing, you know, the amount of pain it takes for them to shoot anything makes it a little bit harder for me to suggest we remove something. So, for self-interestedly, I also, you know, like that objectivity of seeing things. But that stuff is extremely well prepared and planned. And on a deeper level, I think that end scene confluent with the kind of major wise choice he made with the character of Chani, who is, I think, quite different in the book. She's much more a supplicant. She's much more, you know, pro Paul, and in a way they devise something extremely true to the intention of the book, if not the letter, which was to have Chani in conflict and to end there suggests, you know, it really pushes forward into the next film. And which I know nothing about, but I can only imagine that that's, you know, it's quite a kind of, you know, it's a knot that you want to see untangled.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, Greg, one thing I've told you about our show, we want to educate our audience. They love to know how things are made. And I know this might be a dumbed down question to ask, but I'm genuinely curious if you can describe creating lighting rig. Just like particularly the lighting rig during the Paul and Fade fight, that the lighting in that scene is just remarkable. And as somebody, for me, as when I watch a film, I love to be able to separate in my mind, go, okay, I can appreciate the artistic qualities that went into this, from the editing, the score, production design, cinematography. But then at the same time, I don't lose my suspension of disbelief in the moment. And I love that I can kind of go back and forth as an audience member. But I would love to know, like, for that rig in particular, what is your conversation building that? How do you know how it's going to play off of the actors? And can you just walk through that? Because it's one of the best lit scenes I've ever seen.
No, that's very kind, Kevin. Thank you. So going back a step then, to light a scene, you've got to obviously understand why it sits in the film. Of course, right? So you've got to understand where it's going and where we've come from and what it means to that part of the movie. So it doesn't, obviously, a scene never stands alone by itself. A scene stands amongst its things. So the scene that you were just talking about, the end scene of the movie with Chani on that sand dune, you know, that was really important to us, that harked back to those moments of Chani and Paul, those moments of innocence and seeing the water out there. Like that for us was mandatory, because the look in her eye at that end was unlike anything we'd seen before during those moments of introspection and beauty and those relationship moments, you know. So it was critical that we got to that point time-wise. So that's where the first conversation was. Now, before that, Gurney had just nailed our friend's Raban, right? So that was at night. So we had this period of time. It's hard to go, all right, well, do we shoot that at night, the whole Paul Fade fight, or do we shoot it in the morning? It's like, well, it wouldn't be as good at night, because I don't think it needs some level of the world's kind of, you know, waking, turning around like it. So we had to do it at sunrise, which is a really hard thing to do on stage. So because you need, particularly on a set like that had big open wide windows. And so we had to create a big sun rig. And it's probably one of the biggest lighting setups that I've ever done. And again, I full credit to our crew doing that, at Jamie Mills, who's my gaffer on that, who help us design this big wall of light, but a sun ball that was basically just peeking up over the horizon. So, and how do I know how it looks on the actors? I mean, I hope that it looks good. Obviously, I do a pre-light, you know, I do as much planning as I can, and then I do a pre-light. And then when it looks good, I take it to Denis and I say, hey, listen, this is what I'm thinking, after having spoken to him in advance. And he's like, thumbs up, let's do it.
It's amazing. They're telling us we have to wrap. We got a chance to congratulate Greg the first time for his Oscar win for the first Dune. Joe, I want to do the same to you. Congratulations for that win. How did that feel that evening? Was that a remarkable night?
It was wild. One of my favorite things, somebody told me this will happen, is that you know, go uninvited to the Vanity Fair party. And, you know, your limo sort of gets into a narrow space, and eventually somebody in a very fancy suit comes up and says, and you are. And I just pressed the window, went down. I had my Oscar stood there. He says, we've been expecting you. And I waved on. I think that was one of my favorite moments.
But, you know what I worked out, though, Joe? Joe, what awesome. I worked out is they don't check the date. So you could take your one next year, every year, and just put it out the window and walk in.
Right. He's gonna have another one. He'll have another one.
I just blown the whole gag. I should have said that to you privately. I'm so sorry. Can I ask another thing? Where do we see the unedited version of Joe Walker's speech? Because
it's on there.
Ironically,
it's on YouTube now.
Is it? Good.
Yeah, they cut it on the night, which was like, as an editor, how ironic. You know,
ironic as hell. And it didn't cut it well either.
It was a tight little speech, but they about a year ago they put the kind of the proper version up, which I was really gratified by, because you know it had the punchline back in there. And anyway, you know,
the Walker cut. Release the Walker cut.
if you get a chance to look at the speech, it's beautiful and really beautiful. And then the edit of it is no offense to the person who the poor guy who had to get the telecast down to, you know, 4 hours instead of 17 hours. Yeah. He just clearly made the wrong decision to cut at the wrong time in the heat of battle. So
Well, I'm just glad Will Smith liked it.
You guys are amazing.
That is beautiful.
Yes, thank you so much for your time, guys. We'd love to have you back on the show sometime.
Thank you for sharing your stories. And Joe, it's a pleasure to meet you, man. Big honor. We love your work.
Yeah, huge kudos to you guys. I love what you do.
We want to thank our good friends at Warner Brothers Home Video for giving us time with both Joe and Greg. They are welcome to come back anytime. Loved the story about Joe's experience at the Oscars and him getting cut off. And in fact, Warner Brothers Home Video provided us with the link to his longer speech. I'm going to put that on my social media channel if you want to get a chance to. I'm sure Real Blend will retweet it so you guys get a chance to watch Joe Walker give his incredibly funny speech. He's a really charming guy, as you saw from the interview. And then Greg Fraser is becoming a friend of the show. We're thrilled to have him on. Again, this is for the 4K release of Dune Part 2. I'm holding it in my hands. You guys should be able to grab it relatively soon. Make sure that you pick up a copy and bring it on home. We have additional interviews coming up on behalf of Dune Part 2 as well. In addition to Joe and Greg, we got Jacqueline West, the costume designer, and Patrice Vermette, who is the production designer as well, too. They both have longstanding collaborations with Denis, and Jacqueline in particular has an incredible array of filmmakers that she's worked with, including Scorsese. So she's got some incredible stories that she told. Oh, she tossed this great story about doing The Social Network with Fincher that you guys are going to want to hear. So we're going to have that coming up on Real Blend very, very soon. Big tease. If you guys have been paying attention to any of the social media channels for both Real Blend and the three hosts, you might have noticed that all three of us, myself, Kevin, and Jake, were in Los Angeles just recently for the junket for Furiosa. And we were able to sit down with the legend himself, George Miller, who's coming on the show to discuss a Furiosa, Mad Max Fury Road, the entire Mad Max saga, just an incredible, incredible conversation loaded with the types of stories that only someone like George Miller can tell. You've heard about what a wonderful and charming man he is, but he's just a wealth of knowledge, both from a technical standpoint and his approach to storytelling overall. So I'm so happy that all three of us were able to get out there and interview him for this. We're all just sort of dragging ourselves back from LA at this point right now. As I'm recording this, I landed like a few hours ago, and the boys have also been getting themselves back to their home markets. So we're all going to be back together for that episode. You're going to want to listen to that interview with George Miller on behalf of Furiosa. And of course, circle that one on your calendar. It's coming out at the end of May. In the meantime, as I mentioned, thank you so much to Joe and Greg for joining us. Keep it right here for Jacqueline and Patrice for more Dune Part 2 coverage. And just give the Real Blend channel a like and a subscribe if you're a fan of filmmakers and filmmaking and basically just love of film in general. We are a weekly podcast that likes to bring our passion for film and cinema to you guys, and hopefully, you know, get down in front of some of the filmmakers that you guys love hearing more from. We'll be back with a new episode very, very soon, and in the meantime, enjoy your week. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.